Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. This is Native American Heritage Week, and a word of caution this morning. If you're sensitive to stories of extreme trauma, please beware that this segment deals with true stories of systemic abuse of Native peoples and their children. You can join the discussion by email at jx@jeffnet.org. This past summer, the federal government released a second volume of its investigative report on the federal Indian boarding schools across the nation. The report reveals that nearly 1,000 children died in those schools where systemic abuses of Native children were routine. California's role is included in the report. California's first governor, Peter Burnett, in his 1851 address said, quote, that a war of extermination will continue to be waged between the two races until the Indian race becomes extinct must be expected, end quote. California's current governor, Gavin Newsom, signed an executive order that established the California Truth and Healing Council in 2019 to begin the process of revealing the truth and repairing the harm caused by the state to Native peoples for generations. And according to the governor's executive order, the council is to report its findings to the state's tribal advisor on an annual basis and produce a final written report regarding the historical relationship between the state and Native Americans on or before January 1st, 2025. My guest is Christina Snyder Astari. She's the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom and leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. We interviewed Christina back in September and asked her to come back for an extended conversation. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange, Christina.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Well, there's a final report due by the Governor or due to the Governor by January 1st. What do you expect will be in the report?
Well, so we did push back the report's final due date because we had a little bit of delay due to COVID and the extended period of time when we weren't able to convene as well as we would have liked or get out into the community as well as we would have liked. So the final report will be produced on the 175th anniversary of the state, which is in next September. And so not much of a delay, but we anticipate that that report will both reframe the history of California Native people from the diverse perspectives of each of the tribes and each of the Native people. As you may be aware, California was the most populated and diverse place north of Mexico prior to contact. And so how that history has played out has similarly been incredibly diverse and nuanced. And so we're trying to capture with the council's report that history of experience pre-contact and then as different colonial incursions occurred from the different perspectives throughout the state. And it'll also include recommendations aimed at repairing those harms. So those can include policy changes, they can include funding, they can include recommendations for everyday individuals and for corporations to do their part to begin to heal that history of trauma for Native people in California.
So there'll be recommendations for private sector actors to also be involved in the process?
There will. We envision this just to kind of level set. California is currently the fifth largest economy in the world. And so we view that from contact, everything that has happened is something that, you know, has happened to Native people. And that there's not really a person in California that doesn't have a role in undoing what has happened here. And, you know, people in California have benefited from the beauty, the diversity, the resources, all of the things that make California great. And Native people have been displaced from those places and haven't had access to those places because of that displacement. So we view you know, real change happening when everybody steps up. And so it's not just the government that needs to do something. It's, you know, what can I do as an individual? Whether it's I just start teaching my kids a different type of history. And what can I do as someone who, you know, benefits from doing business in a state like California? So we envision it being the biggest public-private partnership effort that we will probably now and into the future.
Well, that sounds comprehensive. How many Native tribes are there in California?
Well, inclusive of non-federally recognized tribes, there are probably over 170. Federally recognized tribes, there are 109.
You know the total population or an estimate?
Of California Native people, I would estimate probably 150 to 200,000 total.
And how many Indian boarding schools were documented in the federal report that were in California?
From what we can see, at least 12. And so those are the ones that are from the Federal Indian Boarding School Report, as you mentioned. So that's not necessarily inclusive of schools that didn't receive federal funding or that were, you know, run by private actors or potentially churches, which we know that there were a few, and that there were some that were even run by, you know, wealthy wives of politicians, because that was the charitable thing to do back in the day. So we envision that being a piece of what our report looks at as well, is that, you know, inclusive of those 12, there's other spaces where people were kind of doing this work of tearing families apart and indoctrinating our youth.
Well, I imagine with such a fragmented landscape, it's pretty tough to get accurate numbers, but do you have any sense of how many total boarding schools there were?
Oh, I'd have to actually, that would be a bigger research project for another time, I think. But I can look into that for you.
Do you know how many Native nations there were in California when the state joined the Union in 1850?
In 1850, well, I'd have to look into that as well, because prior to contact, we had probably around the same number of, you know, different groups of people, so probably close to, you know, 200 different tribes. But then in 1850, we also had tribes that had been relocated and dispossessed of their homelands through the mission system. So it's hard to give you a number because it's, again, that history is so nuanced.
I'm talking with Christina Schneider Astari. She's the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom and leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. We're talking about the federal government's investigative report on past Indian boarding schools in California and current efforts to reveal the truth and repair relationships with Native tribes in the state. Christina, you mentioned the mission system. Can you talk more about what the mission system was?
Sure. And I think that sometimes there is, people tend to think of the different European powers as being distinct and different from each other, but they were all kind of working based on kind of a political strategy. So the mission system that I'm talking about is that was forwarded by the Spanish powers back in the 16 and 17 and 1800s. And they came up through Central and South America and didn't make their way up through North America for some time, until the English and French international powers started kind of moving westward in what would now be called the lower 48 of the United States. And so the mission system in California really started as a response to expanding power of those other European powers. Starting kind of during that period of time when the colonies were formed, the United States were formed, Spain began to have Catholic missions up and down the coast of California. And those missions were not built by the friars. They were built by Native people. And those Native people were basically forced to live in these places where they were removed from their families, removed from their wives, removed from their children, and forced to build these kind of giant adobe missions, all the way up to the mission that is now in Sonoma County. So all the way up that coast, you have tribes that were relocated from their ancestral homelands in this effort to both build those missions, but also in an effort to convert people to Catholicism. And that went all the way up to, as I mentioned, Sonoma County. So the experience of tribes who went through that period of time is a little bit different from those that are north of Sonoma County, who potentially their first encounters with Europeans were the Russian fur trappers that came down the coast from the other way, or potentially Americans in search of gold and kind of basically committing horrible acts to clear out the native people who were already here.
So it sounds like some of the native peoples were subjected to forced slave labor to build these mm-hmm. missions. And then they had their children taken away?
Yep, that's correct. And so basically, the two sexes at the time were removed from each other. And then everybody was basically forced to do labor in the mission. So either build the missions or do labor for the missions. And the children themselves, too, were also separated. And everyone was basically to be converted to Catholicism as well. So you had this kind of pre-American slavery that was taking place, which is really still very much felt by a lot of people. It's why we talk about one of the most traumatic things for Native people now is having to build or to recreate missions as fourth grade projects in California schools. A lot of places don't do that anymore, but a lot of us used to have to build models of missions out of sugar cubes when we were growing up. And there's one, a colleague of mine from one of the tribes down in Luiseno territory, which would have been the native people who built the San Luis Rey mission, talking about how his child recently just had to go do an interactive project where they were building adobe bricks so that they could understand how the missions were built, and thought that was just like the cruelest thing. And so just displaced given the historical trauma of their people. But yeah, so there was this this kind of slavery that was happening at the missions prior to the American era. And then once the American era took place, there was a legalized form of slavery for Indian people, indentured servitude. So part of what we've been doing in the California Truth and Healing process is tracking down those documents that were filed in each of the different counties. And probably not surprisingly, they're very difficult to find. They're very, fragile pieces of paper that basically document who these people are, who they're indentured to, and for the term of years, if there is a term of years.
So is there some sense of how many Native children were forced to attend California's boarding schools? And how many of those 973 children that were documented in the federal report that died were in California?
I don't have that information in front of me, unfortunately. So I'm not going to be able to give you a good answer on that. But I will say that many of the California Native kids, if not all, during a certain period of time, were sent to those boarding schools. Some of them were sent to Indian schools that were day schools by their reservations. The fact that there are any that died and were buried at boarding schools is a travesty, because Native people have our own ways of taking care of our people. But many were also sent out of state. I think I mentioned this last time we were on, but the design of the boarding schools was to basically take, the kids away from their communities and not have them be able to return. So many kids were sent to Carlisle, which is on the East Coast. Many were sent to different, many in Northern California were sent to Sherman Indian School down in Riverside, because if they could see how to get home, they would usually try to get home. And so a lot of the kids that came to California were from places like Navajo, were from places on the East Coast in Oklahoma. And so, the numbers that you're going to see in that boarding school report, which I think they're still gathering information, it's going to be hard to disentangle how many of those kids were California kids versus kids from other places. And I think the major piece is, there shouldn't be a boarding school, or there shouldn't be an educational institution where you have that many children dying and being buried in that place.
Right. Native tribes in California were forced by the U.S. military to sign treaties, and those treaties gave away their lands. When we come back from the break, we have to take a quick break. I want to talk about how many treaties they signed and what happened to that land. I'm talking with Christina Snyder Eshtari. She's the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom and leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. This is Native American Heritage Week, and I'm talking with Christina Schneider Astari. She's the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom and leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. We're talking about the federal government's investigative report on past Indian boarding schools in California and current efforts to reveal the truth and repair relationships with Native tribes. Just before the break, I asked about the Native tribes in California being forced by the U.S. military to sign treaties that gave away their lands. Christina, how many treaties did they have to sign and what happened to those lands?
Well, so in California, there were 18 treaties that were signed in the state. And when those treaties were signed, all of the tribes that had agreed to them, because there's some, you know, issues with whether everybody agreed to them, all relocated to the lands that were reserved to them, because there was supposed to be around 8 million acres of land that were reserved for the tribes to be able to live on in perpetuity, similar to other states where reservations, reserve rights. Hunting, fishing, all of that. So all of the tribes relocated to these places that were promised for them, mostly kind of in inland areas, kind of mostly throughout what is now Yosemite. And what happened was those treaties have to be ratified by Congress in order for them to take effect. So by the time they got to D.C. to be ratified, California business interests and the legislature all decided that they really, really did not want to be have, you know, all of this land be kind of outside of the scope of their reach, really didn't want those treaties to stand. And so they all lobbied Congress to not ratify them. So they went unratified, and then they were sealed with a seal of secrecy and weren't discovered for another around 50 years when a clerk stumbled upon them. So meanwhile, all of these tribes had relocated. Nothing was there because nothing happened. No appropriations happened. Nothing happened because they were never ratified. So when those tribes went back, there was also nothing left for them in their homelands, because when they had left, settlers, ranchers, prospectors had all basically taken up all of the land that Native people had previously occupied. So you ended up having a situation where pretty much every tribe, every Native person in California was made homeless within, you know, a very short period of time. And, you know, land is such a big piece of this whole discussion. I know we're talking about the boarding schools as well, but, the first report of that boarding school, federal boarding school initiative, talks about how those boarding schools were funded by the sale of Indian lands. So basically, you know, send your kids off and also we're going to pay for it by taking away all your land. So it's just like this really kind of visceral thing for California Native people and Native people generally, is this idea that, you know, we're tied to our lands. We've been here since time immemorial. We have spiritual practices that are tied to these lands and spiritual belief systems. And pretty much like the major kind of piece of genocide has been kind of tearing us from those places that are so critically important to us.
So on the fifth anniversary of the state's official apology, it returned a small amount of land back to the Native tribes. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So on the fifth anniversary, we announced a land return that was associated with the removal of the Klamath Dam, which spanned two states, and it's the largest river restoration project in American history. And part of the river restoration and the undamming of the river meant that there was then going to be land that was revealed as a result. So this isn't something that was kind of decided overnight. It's part of the process of, you know, the environmental review documents and all of the discussions that have taken place over the last two decades for dam removal. But we announced on that anniversary that we'd be returning a pretty significant amount of land to the Shasta Indian Nation, which is a non-federally recognized tribe in the area who has ancestral lands along the Klamath River. In addition to that, earlier in the year, we also announced an initiative that granted $107 million to tribes up and down the state to provide access, co-management, and sometimes transfer of California lands as kind of a down payment to what we think we'll see in the Truth and Healing Council's recommendations of, you know, augmenting, amplifying, and doing more of that kind of work.
So can the state of California hold non-government private sector organizations accountable for their role in this travesty, especially if they benefited financially under contract with the government?
That's a good question. I'd have to ask the lawyers about that. I don't know that we can compel people to do the right thing, but we can definitely provide an avenue and a path for them to do the right thing. In other countries that we've seen be, you know, take up kind of initiatives like this, where private sector also does its part, Australia is a good example. There's kind of just a framework for them to be able to do this kind of reconciliatory work. And there's an understanding that, you know, that people are benefiting from the mass dispossession from that place's Indigenous people. And so, you know, there's kind of a greater awareness of a charge to do the right thing. So I don't know. I don't think we want to be in the business of, you know, forcing people to do the right thing. I think we want to be able to tell the truth and then, you know, ideally have them do the right thing because, again, it's the right thing to do.
Okay, that's fair. Let's get into the truth then. How are California's public K-12 schools and its higher education institutions educating generations of Californians about the work that you're doing and the true history of the relationship between the state and California's Native peoples?
Well, right now, there's a process of creating a model curriculum that's going to be released next year, and that is happening in two spots in the state because of kind of that, you know, geographical diversity. So there's kind of twin efforts happening to develop a model curriculum for, I believe it's high school, to teach Native American studies and history. There's also been a bill that was just signed by the governor that requires all K through 12, I believe, when teaching about the gold rush and the mission system, to talk about the negative impacts to California Native people and also the perspectives of California Native people. So that is required to happen in short order. And so, again, those are things that are, you know, legally required to happen. But in the process, there have been several curricula that have been developed. We've been working with the UCs and CSUs to reframe how they think about Native people and how they commit to repatriating human remains and sacred objects. And so it's a very slow moving ship, but it is moving. And we anticipate that in the next couple of years, we'll have a reframed approach on how to talk about Native people in the state of California.
I'm talking with Christina Schneider Astari. She is the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom, and she leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. So, Christina, can we be real honest about what happened? Because here's what I think. The honest framing of these issues is really important. Now, I know the state can't force people to do what is the right thing or what's best, but people can't act in their best interest if they don't know things. And the state is an institution of power. It wielded that power, along with the federal government, to forcibly and violently steal the homes and property of Native peoples. It kidnapped their children. It indoctrinated them into an ideology of white supremacy. And it made them feel they were inferior. And it stole from the children their language, their history, their culture, their identity. So now, how does the state today begin to reconcile such a monumental level of theft if it's not going to educate the entire state honestly?
Well, I think the goal is to educate the state honestly. The report itself is written by California Native authors, and so it's from the California Native voice. It's also got an accompanying documentary, which is covering all of California in our own voices. And so it's as close to what our version of the truth, not as the state, but as California Native people, is. And I think our hope is that if we put that out there and we can get people to really understand from our perspective what happened, we can really start that process of healing. So, you know, I think the governor said it best when he said that this was genocide. There's no other word for it. And he said that to a group of California Native people in person at the state capitol. And I think that's where we start from, is that, you know, this is genocide. What did that look like for all of us? What did that feel like for all of us? What are we still feeling about it? And how do we heal in a way that feels authentic to us? And so, you know, again, that truth that we've been discovering over the past several years of meeting with community is very much subjective based on your experience. And so one Native person's truth is a little bit different from another person's truth because they're descended from different people and how to deal with different things. And so we're trying to create an approach to healing that accounts for all of that, but is also, you know, not just a one-stop, like, here's the recommendations, we're done, but creates a process for a journey for all Californians to continue to learn more, continue to kind of dig out at this ignorance and really build a future where we all agree what happened here and what needs to be done moving forward. So, you know, I think you're right. It's going to be really hard and it's going to be kind of lifetimes of work. But I think, you know, we start with what is our truth and we go from there and what do we want to see done. And, you know, hopefully with our different curricula, we have new tools. We have the Smithsonian's Gold Rush curriculum as well, you know, that we can really continue to chip away at this in a way that that can really address for that massive loss and theft and create a foundation of California and our understanding of who we are as people that begins with our first people.
When you talk about truth and reconciliation and repentance and the historical timeline of what happened and the education of generations today, it sounds like there should be some sort of network of Christian churches and their organizations today in this truth and repentance and reconciliation process. Is there?
There is, and we've had a few of the dioceses approach us wanting to do more. So they are starting to think about this, but it's kind of dependent on a region. And I think likely the Pope's repudiation of the doctrine of discovery, which I think we talked about last time, hopefully some of these acts will start creating more momentum within different church systems to think about how a lot of what they put out into the world was the justification for the massive genocide and dispossession of Indigenous peoples worldwide. But, you know, I think it's, again, I think with everywhere that's grappling with this kind of truth-telling, there's kind of a visceral reaction to the understanding that the truth that you thought was true is not the whole truth. And so we see that as people begin to grapple with this and as they continue to think about, you know, the role of the missions in California, the role of Junipero Serra in California, what the, you know, perspective of the people who were here already might have been, that we see more people coming to the table and having those conversations. And we've seen some of these churches actually host their own kind of reconciliatory types of discussions and spaces.
Well, that's encouraging. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I've got about 30 seconds. What's the end game?
Oh, my gosh. What's the end game? You know, change the world. I think we want Californians. Well, my end game is that all Native California, like California Native people, feel proud of who they are as the first people of this place and can undo the shame and historical trauma and the systemic abuse that just you end up kind of embodying after centuries of this stuff. And like, I would just love to see our youth feel proud of who they are, understand that they're a miracle and that, you know, that they're valued here. And, you know, hopefully if we can create a process for that, then we can have that for all Californians.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. This is such an important conversation. To be continued, I hope. Thanks for joining The Exchange, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
I've been talking with Christina Schneider-Astori. She's the Tribal Affairs Secretary to California Governor Gavin Newsom, and she leads the Governor's Office of Tribal Affairs. I'm Mike Green, and you're listening to The Jefferson Exchange.